Hello and welcome. My name is James Kelly. I'm the head of aviation finance at KPMG. On behalf of KPMG and Airline Economics, I'm delighted to welcome Joe McConnell. Joe is partner and deputy co-chief investment officer at Castlelake. Joe, welcome and thank you for joining us here in December 2025. Maybe Joe, before we get into it, would you mind maybe just giving us an overview of the Castlelake business? Very well known clearly in the industry and has played a key role over the last number of years, but just how you and the business are seeking to support aviation and your customers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for having me here, James. Castlelake is about a $30 billion asset-based private credit manager. Really what that means is that we invest in hard assets, in financial assets, and that's all that we do. We've been investing in asset-based opportunities for 20 years. Aviation today is our largest business. We've invested over $25 billion in aviation, and really over the last 20 years, innovated and evolved our aviation business to the point now where I believe our market offering is rather differentiated in that we can show up to every airline and leasing company in the world and provide them with differentiated capital solutions to finance pretty much every asset on their balance sheet, from the most senior secured risk all the way down to the equity, from new aircraft to end-of-life aircraft, from loyalty programs to slots, gates, and routes. And so we really want to be a trusted partner to airlines and leasing companies and provide them with a different access to creative forms of financing solutions that we don't think are available elsewhere.
Oh, thank you for that, Joe. And maybe then just to broaden it out for a moment, as we kind of speak here at the end of 2025, I'd be really interested in your perspective, given that insight you have into airlines with different products, where the demand picture looks like, or what it looks like, I should say. So from maybe to break that out across the region, so EMEA, ASPAC in the Americas, what does demand look like? What shape are the airlines in at the end of 2025, in your view?
Yeah, I think the good news is that demand is definitely back. I think a lot of people questioned it a few years ago if demand would come back to pre-pandemic levels. And I think it's a good reminder of just the amount of demand there is for air travel around the world. And we've seen this now over the last 50 to 60 years in that passenger traffic demand has been growing at 1.5 times GDP over a very long period of time, even through some very challenging events. When you dive down into the very specific drivers of demand today, most of it is coming from international travel. International is growing at about 2x domestic. And then from a regional perspective, it is the emerging markets that are continuing to drive a lot of the growth. And so Asia Pacific, Latin America, the Middle East, some of those areas are really driving a lot of the growth. And then more mature markets like North America and Europe aren't growing as quickly as the emerging markets.
Okay. And maybe to talk about more near-term issues that have arisen over the course of 2025, right? So some of the geopolitical tensions out there, including some of the issues around tariff. Did you see any knock-on impact around either demand for aircraft or indeed demand, if you go one step further back, to the demand from the consumer?
Yeah, it's been interesting last 5 years. Pandemic followed by a number of different wars and now trade wars and tariffs. And so the headlines have been extremely volatile. The good news, again, I think here is that the headlines, while they created a lot of fear and concern, I think overall we're seeing the global economy continue to charge ahead. We're seeing the aviation economy continue to be rather resilient. Airlines globally are doing pretty well today, all things considered. Aircraft values, engine values, other values for assets in aviation have proven to be rather stable and resilient. And so I do think it's a good reminder again that despite many of the headlines that people focus on, the underlying dynamics of airlines and aviation remain rather stable and resilient. People are flying. Airfares are generally rising around the world, which is offsetting some of the inflationary pressures. I think some of the key potential long-term impacts of the last few years is that there will most likely have to be some inflation due to increased tariffs. And I think that translates directly back into aircraft values and aircraft prices. I think over the last few years, we have seen inflation on a global basis, and that has resulted in higher aircraft values. That has resulted in higher new aircraft prices, higher prices for the parts that are used to service the global fleet. And so I think it's a good reminder that aircraft and, frankly, other hard asset investing classes are inflation protected. That's very important today. And one other, I think, important geopolitical dynamic that has developed over the last few years is that if you go back to the pre-pandemic period, the Chinese leasing companies were growing rapidly. And in many situations, they were the marginal demand. A lot of people thought that that growth was going to continue. And I think if you fast forward to today, many of the Chinese lessors are focused more onshore than they are offshore. And I think that's been a major change in the market just in the last 5 years.
And you touched on there one of the impact of the pandemic and maybe some of the long-term impacts. One of those arguably has been the impact on the supply chain, and particularly maybe supply chain of the OEMs. Maybe some sense that 2025 is going to be a more solid year, if I use those words, from the OEMs, right? What's your perspective on that, right? Do you think the OEMs are delivering aircraft a little bit more reliably? And maybe the second part of the question, I'd be interested in your thoughts on, Joe. What does that look like then from a Castlelake trading strategy perspective, right? So what's your viewpoint on how aircraft are going to deliver over the next while, and how do you factor that into a business plan for trading?
Yeah, it couldn't have gotten much worse than it was a few years ago. So things are better. Absolutely. It feels like the OEMs have turned the corner and production is increasing, which is great to see, because airlines and leasing companies, everybody wants more aircraft to be delivered. They want more certainty around the delivery stream, more certainty around fleet planning and their CapEx planning. And so it is great to see OEMs start to deliver more aircraft. I don't think any of us are out of the woods yet. I believe many of the issues that bubbled up over the last few years are going to take a long time to repair themselves. The undersupply of narrow bodies, we believe, will take many years to correct. The undersupply of wide bodies is going to potentially take even longer to correct. The issues there are rather deep. And then I think the engine undersupply is something that a lot of people have obviously talked about and focused on. But I actually think that the inherent risk that has been created by some of the new technology engines is potentially even overlooked by investors today. When you go back to the prior technology, there was a lot of certainty that an investor could have around engine time on wing, and when an engine needed to be overhauled, what the cost of it would be. For the new technology engines, it is very difficult to predict how long an engine will stay on wing. It is very difficult to predict what a shop visit cost will be. And so I do think that will result, I believe, in a lot more expertise required for investing in those new technology assets. I do believe that will drive a little bit more differentiation and outcomes from maybe the more experienced investors to some of the more new entrants who might not have the team and infrastructure and data and systems to manage through some of that volatility and uncertainty. And so I do think there are a lot of different things that have really changed over the last few years that are going to take a long time to continue to sort themselves out.
Okay. And you touched on the engine challenges there, right? What's your sense of where the OEMs are at, and indeed the airlines, in understanding the maintenance cycles of new engines? You know, trying to understand the durability more as they spend more time in the air. I suppose maybe to ask you a direct question, how does Castlelake think about that when you're investing in new technology, particularly new technology engines?
Yeah, there's a lot of very smart people working on it, and they are making progress. And the engines that they created are seriously modern technological marvels in terms of how far they fly and the fuel efficiency of those engines. And it's difficult to predict reliability, I believe, when you create that technology. And that is the serious issue that everybody is facing today. And from our seat, we don't have a lot more certainty around engine time on wing, engine shop visit costs today, and it is unclear when that certainty will exist. And so that makes it very challenging, frankly, to underwrite these assets today. In that the thing that we love and most people love about aircraft investing is, yes, airlines run a challenged business. Yes, there are airline defaults. But as an aircraft investor, you had a lot of confidence that if there was a default, in most markets, you could quickly move that asset to the next operator without a whole lot of transition costs, at least for narrow bodies. I think there's a major question mark around that today, in that transitioning new technology engines, irrespective of how recently they might have gone in for overhaul, it's a question mark on whether or not you're going to have a borescope finding. And if you have a finding, how long is that engine going to be out of service? How long are you waiting for the next shop visit availability window? And what will that shop visit cost? That amount of uncertainty really changes the whole underwriting exercise, the whole investment thesis, frankly, for making aircraft investments. And I think it needs a lot more attention. It needs a lot more expertise focused on it. And I think investors need to be aware of that elevated risk that really does exist in new technology engines. And frankly, the situation that developed recently with a sizable airline in the U.S., I think is opening a lot of people's eyes and minds to the potential risks that exist in new technology engines. And we've been saying this for a long time. New tech, young, is not always lower risk than midlife and old. And for some reason in this industry, people have latched on to young is better than old, young is lower risk than old. This industry and the underwriting of these assets is far more idiosyncratic than that. And I think people are sort of waking up to that and being reminded of it today.
Is it coming up, George? It's an interesting comment, right? Is it coming up in discussions with investors? Are they now starting to focus beyond the asset into, for example, the technical capability of the team? Is that coming up in live discussions?
Yeah, and I think that's existed really in the last 5 years, just when you look at all of the volatility that occurred in this asset class. From the pandemic, from the wars, and now from these issues today. If you go back from, you know, to the period of 2010 to 2020, that was a 10-year bull cycle for airlines and aircraft. Like, interest rates were declining, airlines were generating record profits, Warren Buffett was buying airline equities in massive size, and people ignored a lot of the underlying risks. And there was a lot of capital that rushed into this space. And I think now you have a real test case in terms of a severe downturn, in terms of how different investors performed through that period of time. And you can attribute that performance, I now believe, to, you know, what is the size of the team? How experienced is that team? How much data do they have? How rigorous are they on the underwrite? Do they know how to manage assets through volatility? And I think that is an important consideration for investors today, whereas back in 2019, everybody was risk on, everybody wanted aircraft exposure, and nobody really focused on the team or the experience of that team. I think today that is front and center, and it is why you've seen more consolidation, both at the airline level as well as the leasing company level.
Okay. Maybe to change tack for a moment and to talk about lease rate factors, and I suppose Castlelake's business and the range of assets you own gives you a kind of unique perspective perhaps on the market. So be interested in your perspective on where lease rate factors are at the end of 2025. So have they leveled off, for example? What's your thoughts on where they might go in 26? And maybe to break that out then amongst aircraft type or different, you know, models, right, just to get your sense on that.
Yeah, I think in the last few years, obviously, lease rates have rapidly increased. I think in 2025, you start to see them level off, particularly for narrow bodies, potentially even start to soften a little bit. Wide bodies, I think the risk is to the upside for lease rates. The undersupply of wide bodies is a material issue that is going to take a very long time to sort out, just given how much of the industrial production at Airbus and Boeing was switched over to narrow bodies, and it just is not possible for them now to really ramp wide body supply to any material degree over the next 5 years. And so we do think that lease rates for wide bodies will remain rather firm. Narrow bodies will enter back into their sort of annual depreciation schedules, and we think that will just be a slow burn really over the next 5 to 7 years for both new tech as well as current tech assets.
Okay. You touched on consolidation, Joe, a few moments ago. Be interested in your perspective on what consolidation means for the sector, and does it have an impact on the Castlelake investment strategy? Does it impact how you look at assets?
Consolidation is a good thing, I think, for airlines as well as leasing companies. I think you are coming out of a period in, like I talked about, the bull run from 2010 to 2020, where there was too much fragmentation. There was too much capital rushing in from all areas for the leasing company as well as many startup airlines that were trying to take market share and pressure some of the majors. I think the pandemic, as any good downturn does, really weeds out some of the survivors from the others. And I think at the airline level now, you're seeing a much more healthy airline environment. Obviously, there will continue to be headlines and some airlines that don't make it or need to restructure. But for the most part, a lot of the sizable airlines are performing pretty well today, and that is a direct result of consolidation and some cost cutting done through the pandemic. And then leasing companies, I think, are going to continue to consolidate. There will always be new entrants, and we welcome that. We want to have more market participants to provide more liquidity for this asset class. But I do think some of the larger players and mid-sized players will continue to work on consolidating the market, and that's healthy for everybody.
Okay. And maybe on a different track, Castlelake has always been a very active trader of aircraft, right? So not necessarily large-scale consolidations, but portfolio sales and acquisitions have been a big part of your story. What's your sense on the current state of the trading market? Who's turning up to campaigns when portfolios are put out there? So where are you seeing the investors or the appetite come from, and maybe where value's at?
Aircraft trading market is robust today. We underwrote 2x our prior peak of aircraft this year, and that obviously was a very busy year. We acquired a lot of assets. We underwrote far more, and we think that continues. There is a lot of assets that were not traded through the pandemic, and so that's a lot of sort of built up supply of aircraft that need to enter the market, both from the established investment grade lessors, as well as from some of the smaller players that maybe don't have an interest in investing in aviation anymore and are going to sell the platform or sell their entire portfolio. There's a lot of aircraft tied up in ABS that was created pre-pandemic. Not a lot of cash flow has been making it to the equity in those structures for many years. And so now you're starting to see some of those investors realize that aircraft have increased in value a little bit. They can generate some proceeds from some of those vintage investments. And so you're seeing aircraft come out of the ABS structures as well. And so we do believe that the market is extremely robust today. We think that will continue. In terms of where values are at, I'd say that values are healthy today. But there are still opportunities to deploy capital. You just need to be really thoughtful about where you make your investments. There's been some new entrants. There's many established players. I'd say overall, it's a healthy market for everybody to participate in and pick their spots while being mindful of some of the risks that we discussed earlier around new tech engines.
As you look into your trading strategy, Joe, into 2026, do you see that volume of trade in Castlelake we're involved in 2025 continuing, or are you looking to escalate or maybe step back into 2026? How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, I think it's going to continue. I think the asset class is in a good spot today. Airlines are performing. Interest rates have come off a little bit and seem to be a little bit more stable. The capital markets are extremely healthy. And so I would consider it a healthy market today for aircraft investors, both the investment grade as well as the midlife players. And aircraft values have not marched to the level that they did back in 2018 and 2019. So it sort of feels like we're a little bit of a Goldilocks environment today. Now, as you know, things can change very quickly, and it's something that we're mindful of. But today, everything seems to be pretty healthy.
Okay. Maybe you touched on it there, the financing market, and I'd be interested in your perspective on the different strands of the financing market. So maybe just to start with the traditional banks, maybe if you step back a couple of years ago, there was a concern that some of the traditional aviation lenders were stepping out of the space. Maybe in Europe, for example, some of the lenders have stepped away. Castlelake have, I'm sure, over the years been party to many of those syndicates and warehouses. What's your sense on the current strength of the banking market, and particularly maybe the depth of that market?
The banking market has consolidated as well, right? So we had a handful of large, rather established investment banks that focused on aviation lending exit the space. But the banks that are still in business are very active today, and very creative, and are providing a lot of capital to the established players. And I think that will continue, and it's healthy for everybody. And so we are seeing the warehouse market be available in size. Obviously, the warehouse to ABS market is open now, and really having those capital markets be available really generates a lot more banking participation, because they have a clear line of sight to the refinancing, which allows them to get more confident in terms of providing the initial capital.
Okay. And then if you look at the overall debt market and maybe the split between the traditional bond capital markets, traditional banks, and maybe some of the alternative lenders, what role, how do you see that split playing out? Particularly, how big a role do you think the alternative lenders, if I call them that, may play in the market over the next number of years?
I think it's going to be a growing market for everybody. And so I think the banks will remain very active. And I think the alternative lenders are going to remain active. And frankly, there isn't, despite everybody thinking there's like a ton of competition between the two, you would be surprised at how sort of differentiated the two markets are. Yes, there is overlap, but a lot of what the alternative lenders do is different than what the banks do, particularly given a lot of the new sort of regulations that have been applied to the banks. The banks are really focused more so on short-term warehouse fee-generating business, sort of warehouse to ABS type models, whereas the alt lenders are focused more on long-duration investments in providing capital to borrowers that potentially need more advance, more flexibility, more risk-taking than a bank could get. And so there isn't as much overlap as you would think. So I think both banks and alt lenders can be successful here long term.
Okay. And maybe to touch on a different debt product we haven't spoken about today, the ABS market, right? So Castlelake have a long and pretty successful track record in the ABS market. So be interested in your perspective. You've got away a number of ABSs over the course of 2025. Maybe to give us a sense of the depth of investor appetite, you know, were you happy with the rates to achieve, right? And then what are you looking to into 2026 with the ABS product? Will it continue to be part of your portfolio?
Yeah, the ABS market is back. We're back to sort of pre-pandemic levels in terms of debt structure, in terms of pricing, in terms of advance. And I think this asset class, over the last few years, has proven it as much as any other asset class has ever proven itself. When you look at the downturn that aircraft went through, and when you look at the ABS performance is a great sort of indicator that everybody can look at in terms of how the asset class performed, it is remarkable how resilient the asset class has been, how resilient the ABS structures have been. And I think investors can look at that now and say, wow, that, you know, is a very resilient asset class. I can underwrite it to six standard deviations of performance and still get my principal and interest back. One thing I would say is that investors are more focused on who the servicer is. They are more focused on who owns the equity and making sure that there is real alignment between servicer and equity, making sure that the servicer has some of that experience, some of that size, some of that data, that understanding of how to manage assets through volatility and structures through volatility. But for the most part, I think, you know, this has been a major period of real support building for the aviation asset class in the ABS markets, which is why they're back so quickly, which is why the equity market in ABS will likely open up sometime in the next few years, and which is why, you know, we completed three ABS transactions last year, and I wouldn't be surprised if 2026 was similar to that. And so I just think it's a very important financing tool for investors to have in this asset class. It is the right type of financing for midlife aircraft. And I think investors in the capital markets in aircraft ABS have really been paid to take that risk, even through a severe downturn.
Yeah. I mean, two questions come out of that. One, do you think the kind of classically cited $10 billion sort of market and record peaks, do you think we could push past that in 2026? Is the pool of investor appetite there as an overall industry level? Maybe a first question. And then I might just ask you then secondly about the ENO comment you made. It sounds like you're seeing that 2026 has the potential for an ENO transaction in the market. Are there particular conditions you would be looking for that to be achieved, right? So are there innovations, are there changes needed in the product, particular market conditions you think will be needed to get an ENO away?
Yeah, look, I think the $10 billion number is something you could easily surpass. When you put that into the larger pool of overall ABS products, it's a drop in the bucket, right? So I think one of the challenges that this asset class has had is just getting people to focus on it is the challenge. And so more size should create more size. More consistency here in deal-to-deal consistency, I think, is important just to get people to not have to do so much work on every single deal. I think that's one of the negative feedbacks is that it requires a lot of work to underwrite different structures and different portfolios and different servicers. And so the more consistency, the more liquidity, the more size that we can bring to this market, I think there is a lot of upside in terms of how large the ABS market can be. In terms of an e-note, I didn't say 2026. I said it could be coming sometime, I think, in the next few years. And I just think that the underlying cash flows that are generated by these structures are unlike anything else that you see in other asset classes. And that's the thing that continues to draw us to aircraft investing is the amount of free cash flow, the levered current yield that gets kicked off of these portfolios with quite a bit of contractual lease term, typically 4 or 5 years at pretty material equity yields, is something that investors are drawn to.
Okay. Maybe to just touch on the investor point more generally, you're given you sit in the Castlelake business and the range of assets that Castlelake underwrites and supports. How do you sell aircraft as an investment to investors? And are the nature of those investors changing, right? So are we seeing maybe, for example, investors with a lower return hurdle coming in? Maybe what might be non-traditional aviation investors, but the likes of more pension funds, more insurance money, dare I say even more retail money starting to come into the market. Is that a feature of what you're seeing in your discussions in Castlelake?
Yeah, I think it comes back again to supply and demand, right? Talking about demand for air travel has exceeded GDP by 1.5 to 2 times for over 50 years. Supply is a duopoly. These assets generate a unique amount of current yield, which de-risks your investment. And to the extent you've been doing this a long time and know how to manage the assets through volatility, you can show a pretty attractive track record to the investors, which is always the most important thing. And so that's really how we talk about it with our investors. And then I think one of the other things that we haven't really touched on is just the rise of asset-based finance or asset-based private credit. And the amount of capital that is rushing into asset-based private credit. We saw this, you know, starting 10, 15 years ago in corporate direct lending, which grew to, I think, a $2 trillion market. And we're starting to see similar tailwinds to asset-based private credit. And as that capital comes into the established asset-based private credit managers, there is going to be more liquidity. And it's something that we've got one of our eyes on in terms of just making sure that that capital coming in isn't doing anything unusual to asset values, potentially inflating them to a point where the asset class isn't attractive anymore. As an incumbent in asset-based finance, we've been a beneficiary of this so far. But it's something we're going to keep an eye on is more capital is absolutely coming into all areas of the asset-backed markets. Insurance companies, as you mentioned, are becoming far more creative around how they manage their balance sheets. They are looking for far more private credit solutions. Asset-based finance is a major focus there. They invest, obviously, in a different part of the capital structure, which is primarily investment-grade risk. And aviation is an asset class that I think is rather attractive for them in terms of some of the spreads that you can generate compared to the risk profile of the investments that you make. And so I do believe that will continue to bring more investment grade capital into aircraft leasing as well.
Okay. One of the growth channels or business channels we haven't spoken about is sale leaseback market, right? So is that something that Castlelake are looking to participate in sale leaseback campaigns? Are you focused on some of the trading and M&A type channels we've already spoken about?
Yeah, we completed a few sale leasebacks this past year for probably 20 or 25 aircraft. I would say the sale leaseback market overall is pretty weak today, in that there just aren't that many aircraft coming to market. Obviously, the OEMs need to produce more. I think airlines are buying a lot of aircraft themselves because the financing markets are pretty attractive. But sometime in the next 12 or 24 months, I would expect the sale leaseback market to become a lot more active.
Okay. Maybe as a reflection in, Joe, as we look, we're at the end of 2026. It feels like you're pretty optimistic about this industry, so I'd be interested in your take on that. Have I picked that up correctly? And then when you get back into your desk and start of January 2026, what are the big mega trends you're looking for, or indeed big risks that you managing this business are looking out for?
Yeah, the two big things are obviously how many aircraft are the OEMs producing and what's happening with the engines. Those are the two major things that are going to impact the long-term values of aircraft. And something that we focus on every single day at Castle Lake is just trying to understand how many new aircraft are coming online, what are all the airlines doing with their current fleets, and then what's happening with the engines, and how quickly is that going to get sorted out, and how, you know, our shop visit costs and time on wing going to settle in here. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to have the answer to those questions for a few more years, potentially more than a few more years on the engine side. And so, you know, as is always the case, you need to deal with some level of uncertainty. And again, that's why we rely upon having a very wide funnel when we're originating transactions, really focusing in on transactions that really meet or exceed the hurdles that we've set forth internally. And then just constantly keeping our head on a swivel and looking out for different things that are changing in the market and relying upon that high current yield and the contractual cash flow to get our basis paid down.
Okay, before we wrap up, Joe, can I just get a reflection from you? Castle Lake is 20 years, celebrating its 20-year anniversary this year. How has the aviation business evolved in that period? Like, what's changed, both maybe positive and negative over that time? And what do you think, if you look out over the next period for Castle Lake, what do you think might change in the future?
We've innovated and evolved a lot. As you probably know, we started doing end-of-life in 2005, and then midlife, and then new. And then we created a recourse entity, and all along the way, we were doing a whole bunch of different financing and lending against aircraft assets and non-aircraft assets. More recently, Itasca Re and Merit, our aviation credit business, where we're providing capital to airlines for dip financings and exit financings and non-aircraft financings. I think we're very excited about where the market is today. How our full service capital solution offering is really resonating with airlines and leasing companies. And I think going forward, we just want to continue to be really good partners, trusted partners to airlines and leasing companies. We do what we say we're going to do. That is in our blood at Castle Lake, in our DNA. It is so important to our brand and who we are. We understand how small this market is from a relationship perspective. When we take our brand and our relationships and the credibility that we've established extremely seriously. And so we want to continue to do what we say we're going to do. We want to be really good partners to airlines and leasing companies. And most importantly, we want to create value. We want to create value for airlines. We want to create value for other leasing companies. We want to create value for our own investors. And so we're just going to continue to focus on taking it one day at a time. I'm sure we'll continue to evolve. I'm sure we'll continue to innovate. And we just love investing in aviation and all the relationships that we've built along the way.
Okay. Well, Joe, on that, that note, right, that leaves it for me to thank you for your thoughts and insights. I think our listeners and viewers will find them really interesting. And, you know, as we look into 2026, continued success to you and the Castle Lake team. So thank you.
Thank you, James. Really appreciate the time. Have a great day.